Welcome to another exclusive SearchDataManagement.com podcast. I'm Hannah Smaltry, site editor. Today, we're talking about how to get started with data governance. To learn more about this often complex process of managing decisions and policies around data ownership and data usage throughout an enterprise, and that's putting it simply, I called an expert. Jill Deshay is partner and co-founder of Baseline Consulting, a professional services firm specializing in enterprise data issues. She's also the author of eData and the CRM Handbook, and the co-author of the recently released Customer Data Integration, Reaching a Single Version of the Truth. Suffice to say, Jill has lots of experience working on data projects and working through complex data governance issues. So we called her up for some more information and advice about data governance. Thank you so much for speaking with us today, Jill.
Hi, Hannah. Nice to be here again.
If we could just start off sort of level set, what is data governance? What does that term actually mean?
Well, let me start by reading you our sanctioned definition of data governance, and then we'll back into what it means. So here goes. Data governance is the decision-making and oversight process that prioritizes investments, allocates resources, and measures results to ensure the data being managed and deployed in companies is leveraged to support business needs. Now, I know that's a mouthful, but I think what we want to do with data governance is something that the authors Weil and Ross wrote about in their book, IT Governance. And when they define IT governance, they define it as decision rights around IT decision making. So decision rights is basically the authority to make decisions and policies around an asset. So data being a corporate asset, which we all know it is, data governance is really the decision rights around data as a corporate asset.
Data governance is something we've been hearing about a lot as a starting point for customer data integration, master data management, or other kinds of data management projects. Why is it so important to address data governance before getting started on those kinds of programs?
Well, it's ideal to begin a CDI or an MDM project with formal data governance because the business needs to come up with the policies around the meaning and the usage of the data before it's deployed to the systems and the users that need it. And, you know, we've all heard the horror stories of, you know, our company can't agree on the definition of customer, so I don't know what I'm looking at when I look at this data. Unfortunately, this isn't always practical. So we're counseling our clients right now to be governance aware and to start putting the pieces in place either before or as they begin initiatives like master data management or customer data integration. So for most of our clients, it's still easier to pitch something like a CDI or an MDM to business executives because they can see through the technology what the results will be, easier than it is to convince them to participate in a data governance project. So we're saying piggyback data governance on some of these activities so you can socialize it as you're delivering results with the technology.
A white paper that you wrote recently called A Data Governance Manifesto, Designing and Deploying Sustainable Data Governance, says that some of the techniques of data governance have been around since the 1970s. And then recently, Gartner predicted that 90% of data governance projects will fail at their first attempt. I put these statistics together, and it sounds funny to me, like best practices haven't been sorted out in the last 30 years. Why is this discipline so difficult? Why will so many people fail?
Yeah, and I think part of that is because the terminology is different. And right now, people hear the word governance, and immediately, for some reason, they think committee. So you can sort of watch what's happening in companies today. Somebody sees an opportunity to align data around business processes, and they start trying to convince people to participate in a governance committee. And these business people are thinking, well, what's data governance, and how is this going to work, and what do I need to do, and what am I responsible for? And so they attend a couple meetings, and in the white paper that you referred to, I call it the kickoff and cold cut syndrome, where, you know, they go to a meeting over lunch, and there's, you know, deli food, and, you know, none of these questions are answered. You know, how will this work, and what are my responsibilities? None of these questions is answered in the first meeting, and there's really no clarity beyond general consensus that data is an asset. Everybody's nodding their heads. And then what happens is the data governance effort starts to break down, And data governance can even become a dirty word over time. And that's really a shame because it really solves some important problems when it's done right. But there's this rapid disaffection of constituents when it comes to data governance if it's treated as a series of meetings or a big committee.
So can you give us the secret to data governance success now? Is there a checklist? Is there a template to work off of?
And this is really interesting because not a lot of people are approaching data governance this way, but the secret is to design it. And I know it sort of sounds obvious, but this tends to scare people because I think there's a human tendency to immediately enlist other people. But unless data governance is really designed, and by that I mean, you know, looking at the company's specific culture, its organizational structure, the decision-making processes, and the immediate business requirements that data governance can address, conversations about data governance just won't seem relevant to people, and it risks becoming an intellectual exercise. So sort of back to that kickoff and cold cuts example I gave, you know, people will convene for a period of time and in the spirit of goodwill and in the company's interest, but, you know, over time, taking the time to deliberately design data governance with company-specific factors in mind can lay out the framework that you need to really be able to pitch it and to really answer a lot of those unasked questions that I talked about before and enlist people the right way. And it just becomes a heck of a lot easier to really get people involved in a sustained data governance activity as sort of a formal and ongoing process when those questions are answered in advance through rigorous design of governance.
Rigorous design of governance sounds like it could be pretty time-consuming for some people. So in order to get funding or just the authorization to spend the time on this, should people head straight for the top and convince executives to give them a blank check and a big stick to solve the problem? Or you said they shouldn't necessarily do the kickoff and cold cuts approach. What should they do to get sort of funding and support for this when they're just starting to design it?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And, you know, it goes back to the fact that for data governance, there really aren't sort of the standard best practices. The answer really does depend on how the company's decision-making processes look. So, for instance, we're working right now with a large financial services firm, and the C-level executives there have a lot of control, and the company can turn on a dime based on executive edict. So the CEO says, you know what, we're going to become more customer-focused, and everybody changes the way they do things. A company like that would probably be better at adopting a top-down approach to data governance that starts with a small steering committee that has enough authority to make things happen. And I sort of compare that with a high-tech company that we're working with that almost practices anarchy when it comes to decision-making. Whenever there's a problem, somebody just fixes it themselves. So there, a grassroots effort might make more sense than imposing executive edict around governance. So, you know, to answer your question, it really all does come back to what current decision-making practices look like and how the company's culture supports them.
So once you sort of determine that, where do you start? How do you even sort of get this off the ground?
Yep, and I know it sounds trite, but, you know, we say start with the need, pain, or problem that needs solving. And, you know, we're working with a mortgage lender right now who just can't see the different relationships it has with the same individual. And that's a huge issue, not only for customer data integration, but for data governance. And the business impact is huge. This, you know, this inability to actually recognize an individual customer results in things like duplicate mailings, redundant conversations, and frankly, silly sales pitches that have really embarrassed the company. And they're starting data governance by defining the elements that need to be in the customer's master record and that need to be shared across systems. So what that looks like is making sure that the definitions are clear, what constitutes customer value, what are the components of that, is profitability a component of that, is revenue a component of that, is return on marketing investment a component of that. You can sort of see the policy making and decision rights sort of entrenched in some of these issues. Does the term revenue mean booked revenue or billed revenue? And just as importantly, making sure that those policies are realized in the new systems and processes that are being deployed. So where somebody starts depends on a real business need, not, again, some sort of convening a committee for what really results in simply an intellectual exercise around the importance of data.
Practically speaking, who's doing all this? I'm wondering how successful data governance programs are structured, who's on the team, what kind of skill sets, can data governance be a part-time job?
Yeah, you know, we're seeing sort of the evolution of the structure of data governance. And so we're seeing sort of a formal committee over time, once data governance has been designed and the barriers have been taken away. And that committee is sort of the general committee that begins data governance and begins the policy making. And clearly, that committee is comprised of IT and business people that are working together to come up with those policies, and more importantly, to determine who has the authority to make those policies and who has the authority to execute those policies. But over time, what we're finding is as that process, that decision rights process matures, that the emergence of what we call data governance regimes takes hold. Because at the end of the day, a human resources person doesn't necessarily need to be involved in a governance meeting around, customer profitability policies or privacy policies. And so what we're finding is that over time, as governance matures and the vocabulary of governance pervades the organization, the concept of these regimes, which is smaller units of decision-making authority for specific data subject areas or around specific business processes, occurs. So there's sort of a deconstruction of this high-level team into smaller, faster decision-making regimes. I write about this in the white paper, and that has worked very, very well because it allows people to control what's controllable and what they've got domain over, and while informing other people about those policies and decisions as they move forward. So it actually works very well. We don't recommend starting there, but as governance matures, this model of regimes works very, very well.
What are the deliverables or the resources that a data governance team might actually develop and maintain? Like, what do they actually produce?
Well, you know, it's interesting because when we go out to clients who are interested in starting data governance, one of the first questions we ask them is okay, so let's sort of paint the picture. Let's paint the scenario of a working data governance framework. What's your ability to execute on that? And that's sort of the million-dollar question, because what we find is there should be a closed loop, and not a lot of people understand this. There needs to be a closed loop between data governance, which is, again, the policy making and decision rights around corporate data, and data management, which is the execution of those policies. So when we talk about what success looks like, what it looks like is making sure that the policies that come down from this data governance process are actually executed in a regular and sustainable way. And that can look like anything from making data quality more robust to making sure that metadata is formalized to enacting data privacy and security laws within the data itself. So data stewardship, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners of this podcast are surprised that this hasn't come up sooner in the podcast, but data stewardship is really the act of aligning the policies from data governance with the execution of data management and tracking all of that data across its supply chain with the company. So back to your question, Hannah, of what does success look like? Success looks like a closed loop between the policy making and the constant evolution of the data quality and deployment over time.
Since you brought it up, this issue of data stewards, what is the role of data stewardship in data governance?
Well, we can have a whole podcast on data stewardship, Hannah, but let me just say a couple words about it in the context of data governance, because data stewards, for better or for worse, have really become roving linebackers in a lot of companies where, you know, anything having to do with data, the data steward shows up. But we find there are sort of two qualifiers for a successful data steward. And one of them is somebody that understands data at either the subject area level or even the element level enough to track it across its supply chain or its lineage at a company. So a data steward really understands the systems of origin, you know, where the data is created, where it comes from, and how it's touched across the organization by different systems and different users, and what its life cycle looks like in a company. So the data steward is really the de facto expert on a piece of data or a domain of data, for example, customer data or financial data or chart of accounts data, depending on the scope and the scale of the organization, across that data's life cycle in the company. So that's number one. It's sort of that data owner, that data expert, if you will. But we also see the data steward as very much of a visionary and a change agent. We find that a lot of people who sort of raise their hands and say, look, you know, we need our processes around data to be more robust, become de facto data stewards in an organization. So what we're finding is this role of a change agent really means, hey, you know what, I see this data, I see how it's being used, I see how it's confusing people, I see how we can make it better. And that has not only tactical implications in terms of data management, that actually has strategic implications in terms of customer loyalty, smarter target marketing, better compliance, and ultimately higher ROI for a company as well. So data steward is a big role, and we see the data steward in a data governance context actually participating in not only the data governance policy making, but also as a liaison down to data management where that policy execution is taking place. So in a lot of ways, the data steward becomes sort of the mouthpiece on behalf of the data governance process to data management. It's a really important role.
In terms of data stewards, Jill, I've talked to a lot of people at different companies. It seems like data steward can be a role or a title that describes people that have very different job responsibilities. How many data stewards are usually at a company? What do they do? I mean, is this something that's real or just something that I've heard, this sort of inconsistency in the roles and responsibilities?
Yeah, there is really no one job description for data steward. And what we find sort of counterintuitively is the role of the data steward depends on the size and the scope of the organization. So there may actually be a data steward, you know, within each business unit for that business unit specific data. What we're finding more and more is that most companies will have a subject area specific data steward. So there'll be a customer data steward, a financial data steward, you know, a product data steward, and those data stewards will be responsible for the quality and deployment of the master data for that data domain. However, again, that really depends on the size and the scope of the company. A lot of companies can't afford to have a data steward for each domain. And in that particular case, what we're finding is the difference between a data steward on the business side, who understands sort of the business context and usage for the data, versus what we call a source system data steward, somebody on the IT side who understands the systems that generate and process that data. So again, it really does depend on the scope and the number of organizations in a company, how the role of data steward is sort of divided up.
Can you offer, do you have any final thoughts on this subject, this big subject of data governance, or any words of inspiration for those getting ready to take on a data governance challenge?
You know, I'll just say a couple things. One is, again, don't rush to convening a committee. That usually backfires. Don't prematurely enlist executives in data governance. We're finding that there's a lot of unnecessary missionary work that's going on in trying to, you know, proselytize the value of data to executives who actually just want to see results. And you know, we're also saying, you know, let data governance have some teeth. Piggyback on an existing initiative or project that really needs data to be managed as an asset and really needs data in order to inform its success. We've seen with a lot of CRM projects that people have hit the wall because of data. So data governance really matters in some of these very customer-focused initiatives. So when we're getting ready for data governance, I think the three pieces of advice are, you know, don't rush to committee. Make sure to piggyback on a specific initiative that is already perceived to promise some value, and make sure that the ability to execute on the resulting policies is there at the beginning.
Well, thank you again for speaking with us today, Jill Deshay, partner and co-founder of Baseline Consulting.
Thanks, Hannah.
To learn more about Jill Deshaies or Baseline Consulting, please visit their website at baseline-consulting.com. That's baseline-consulting.com. And you can also find that web link along with more information about Jill Deshaies on the page where you downloaded this podcast. And to learn more about data governance, we hope you'll continue to turn to searchdatamanagement.com. Visit the page where you downloaded this podcast to find links to many more data governance articles and resources, as well as a link to Deshaies' recent white paper, The Data Governance Manifesto. And if you have a data governance story to share, or any data management thoughts or suggestions or comments for that matter, please look for the email link on the podcast download page to send me an email and let me know. Once again, I'm Hannah Smoltry, site editor. You've been listening to an exclusive SearchDataManagement.com podcast. Thank you for listening and have a great day.